Welcome to a brand new episode of the All Hoops Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Inman, joined as always by my co-host and producer to the stars, Chris Burrito. We're going to discuss the Blazers regime change, the Knicks rotation change, and much more. Before we get to all that, Chris, my friend, it's been 2 weeks. How are you?
Hey, Stevie. I just got back from my trip from Colombia, and it was fantastic. But since I was gone, there have been a few changes, one of them being on the Knicks. You know, the Knicks just had to reshape their lineup. You know, they've been struggling off the bat this season. They've been a more or less a 500 team, so the record is not as surprising. But when you heard the news that Kemba Walker was being moved out of the starting lineup and simply out of the rotation altogether, what was the first thought in your head?
I was shocked. I mean, you know, this is a team that has not made a lot of changes over the last few weeks, right? And few years, excuse me. And, you know, you saw Elfrid Payton last year. We begged for him to be taken out of the starting lineup. And it took all year of poor performance and into the playoffs for them to finally make that move. I didn't think this was going to happen this soon. Kemba was still shooting the ball okay. His offense was there. You know, he was another threat as a shooter. But just defensively, they were just getting torn apart. And, you know, I keep going back and forth about whether defense matters, right? Especially in, like, you know, in the NBA, you can hide guys, but he was getting picked on. And then Evan Fournier is not a great defender either. So just having a backcourt of guys who just don't defend was just really hard for the Knicks, because they were just getting chewed apart to start games. And every time the bench had to come in and save them. So I'm not really surprised they are taking him out of the starting lineup. I'm surprised they're taking him out of the rotation entirely.
I mean, to me, the point you made about the defensive liabilities of Kemba Walker and Fournier were one of the things I was mostly concerned with to start the season, right? And so far, one of the few times that I'm right this time. And I think moving forward, is Alec Burks going to be the point guard for the foreseeable future? Or does this mean he's just keeping the seat warm for someone like IQ to eventually become the starter, or for Rose to become the starter? A lot of these questions are the ones perking up right now. Right now, since they've made the change, they're on a two-game losing streak. Granted, against teams like the Nets and the Bulls, who are two of the best teams in the East.
Did they make that trade for the – didn't they make the change for the Hawks game too, which they won? Didn't Burks start there? Oh, I'm sorry. So Kemba was hurt that game. Burks started. So it did start 3 games ago. They made the announcement 2 games ago. But as you said, I just think it's – if Burks continues to play the way he's playing, he's going to start.
Quite frankly, he's been playing really well. I think the thing that the Knicks need to do is just address those long lapses of offensive infutility and figure out their late-game offense, because they still haven't figured it out. They've added weapons like Fournier. Fournier has been clutch. He hit that, you know, three the other night against the Nets in the waning seconds. It's just, I'm so frustrated by this team, because they somehow always find ways to stay in the game, but never manage to win it altogether. Whether it's on Randall's part to be better offensively down the stretch, making those two free throws that he missed in that final minute against the Bulls. Like, this is a different conversation right now, right? If they beat the, if they
even turnover where he got picked off by Caruso.
Right. If they don't make those errors in judgment or whatever, this is a different conversation today. And, you know, they have a Warriors game coming up, and, you know, it's way too early for panic, and I'm not even suggesting anything of the sort, but I think we're going to continue to see this pattern, and the team is clearly falling the burden of expectations now.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, that's a very good point. It's a concern. This team right now reminds me a lot of the playoff team we saw last year that got bounced in 5 games versus that, you know, uptrending regular season team that seemed to get better as the year went on. It's just, they just have trouble finding offense. And they're shooting more threes, so they're definitely trying new things. They just, you know, they don't have a ton of shooters. So that's an issue there. I think they gotta be in transition more. You know, I mean, the Garden is electric when Derrick Rose is throwing these alley-oops to Obi Toppin, right? But it seems like that starting lineup, the Randles, the Fourniers, they don't run. And I think it's really hard when you don't run and then you don't defend on the other end to get off the leads. And they just come off as looking exhausted by the end of these games. Mitchell Robinson looked gassed against the Bulls. Randle looked gassed. And when they took Mitchell Robinson out, Clyde kept going, you know, the mice are going to play. You know, you have no center in the game, the last 2 minutes of the game. And, you know, you can kill Thibodeau for that, but you really can't because Gibson's ejected. Noel's been hurt basically all year. And Mitch just looked absolutely gassed in 25 minutes of play, where I'd rather go no center and hope you can get offense than try to play a gas Mitchell Robinson, not get the offense, and then potentially not get the defense either. So they got to figure out the center thing, because that duo of Noel and Robinson are the anchors. They're the ones who really stop things, because when a Kemba or a Fournier gets blown by, there's still a protection at the rim. And I know Mitch has been doing good with the blocks, but, you know, they haven't been that same elite defensive unit that had made the Knicks a good defensive team last year.
Well, I think a big part of that was having someone like Reggie Bullock, who was played really well defensively as a wing defender for the Knicks. I mean, can we say that Fournier is that guy right now? No. Can we say that even Barrett is that guy right now?
No.
He's made strides, but, you know, they're not turnstiles either, but at the same time, these are not the guys that made the team so well defensively. And then just looking on, I mean, with the Kemba situation real quick, I guess the thing that Knicks do now is look for potential trade partners, right? Who might that even look like? What team might be a good fit for him?
Yeah, you're looking for a contender who has a piece in that $8 to $12 million range. It just isn't really fitting in. You know, you look at the Lakers and they have, you know, guys like Malik Monk, who, you know, you and I kind of disagree with a little bit. You talk about Kendrick Nunn, who really hasn't played much for them so far. He's been hurt. Those are, you know, a guy like that. And you're just kind of saying, we're swapping our guy who doesn't fit here for your guy who doesn't fit here. I feel like that's the kind of trade that's going to make the most sense. I keep seeing this John Wall thing. That is 100% not happening, because for that to happen, the Knicks have to basically break up their entire bench. You got to ship out Burks. You got to ship out Rose, or, you know, one of those guys plus Fournier plus Kemba Walker. It's not going to work. And I don't know what kind of shape John Wall is in. I mean, I see him just hanging out in street clothes at these Rocket games, which also is weird. Like, if you're going to say you're not playing for us, send him home. What are you having him hang out with the team for? It doesn't make any sense. I've never seen anything like that. But I definitely think, for one, you can't trade Kemba Walker until after December 15th, since he signed this summer. And two, I believe it's going to be a headache for headache kind of situation, where it could drag out for another month or two.
Yeah. And then the aspect that kind of weighs on me a little bit is that Kemba Walker came here, gave up some money in the Oklahoma City for him to leave Oklahoma City. And now he's here to play home. There's a lot of hype in him coming back home, and it didn't work out. I mean, listen, like, you saw him last night. He was like cheering on his teammates, which I think is a great touch from him. It sucks it didn't work out. It didn't work out with other New York City reunions like Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, Stephon Marbury. But let's move on real quick to the Blazers, who appear to be cleaning house now. They terminated their general manager, Neil Olshey. And I think it raises the question of whether Damian Lillard doesn't want to be part of another rebuilding process now on an organizational level, and which whoever the new person is might want to have a different philosophy, may want to like trade Dame. It's tough to say. It's tough to say. I mean, the team is not very good right now. And you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, is this the final straw for Damian Lillard?
Doesn't help. I don't know if it's the final straw. I mean, they're promoting from within. And we talk about it a lot with our New York Giants. When you promote, when you get rid of one guy and you promote his basically his assistant, I'm not sure how much things are going to change. I mean, this is a team from ownership down that keeps saying, we're not going to rebuild. We're not going to blow it up. We're going to make it work with Dame and CJ. And I believe they have missed their window to trade CJ for that impact wing who can really fit with Damian Lillard. So I don't know what they're going to do. My guess is they're going to kind of sit on their hands and just hope the Blazers can turn this thing around. And then they're going to go into the summer trying to just do the same thing. And your hope is that Dame does not get impatient enough to ask for a trade. And I don't believe he's going to get traded this deadline in February. And it really just comes down to, has he seen enough here to give up and to say, okay, go trade me to a real contender. And, you know, it remains to be seen. He's not playing his best. You know, he's going to turn 32 next summer. You know, he's shooting under 40% from the floor. People are saying it's because of the new foul rules. He's not getting the calls he used to get. I think it might just be a slow start combined with that, but it's hard for the Blazers to say, okay, let's blow this thing up getting rid of your franchise guy, unless he comes to them and says, get me out of here, which for what I understand, what you understand, he's not done that yet. So I think it's all status quo for the Blazers. They're going to keep swimming around in mediocrity until then.
Just to bring this back to the Knicks real quick, like, we both know the situation is ongoing. We have no idea whether Dame's going to go or not, but assuming, let's say Damian Lillard wakes up tomorrow and says, oh, I want to be traded from you. I don't want to coexist in Portland and whatever this carcass of a roster is. Is it time? Should the Knicks, I should say, trade their young assets, including RJ Barrett, for Damian Lillard? Would you make that trade right now?
It's a little tougher than it was when we had this discussion a few months ago, but I think the answer is still yes. He is a top 10 player in the game, a top 2 or 3 point guard in the game. I don't really believe that his slow start means that he's declining. If he does and you trade everything for him, that means another 5 to 10 years of a horrendous rebuild. If you're the Knicks without draft picks, which would be horrible, but at the same time, it's a great risk reward that I believe that's what this front office is here for. Their job has been to collect as many picks and young players as they can to cash them in for a chip like this. And I don't really know if there's going to be a better chip than Damian Lillard the next 1.5 to 2 years.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. And I also think with the height and play of Tyrese Maxey, I think you can even make the argument that, like, the Sixers can be involved in a trade for Dame now too. Like, I'm pretty sure Maxey, Ben Simmons does it.
Does it? I mean, it depends on what you think of Ben Simmons. Like, this is a guy who's quit on his team. He can't really score unless he's in transition. Do you really want that as the face of your franchise? Are you really going to trade? Like, it depends on how you want to build your team. Like, you just saw the Houston Rockets blow it up with James Harden, and they said, we don't want Ben Simmons. We'd rather have a bunch of draft picks in 2026, tank real hard, and just hope for, you know, better days ahead than to go with a Ben Simmons-led team that might win 40 games. So I don't know how the Blazers feel about it. I'm sure there are some teams that would prefer the tanking route, and then there's some others that would prefer the Ben Simmons route. So it really just depends on, first of all, we don't really know who's in charge, but depends on what the new GM wants to do in Portland.
The person in charge is a player of personal development now.
Is he interim or is he the guy going forward?
He's interim. Right. So right now the Blazers are in a weird spot where they're like neither here or there, can't really decide for the future and whatnot. So it's gonna be rough. Let's go over to another Western Conference team.
Real quick, last thing on the Blazers, though, if they do blow it up, I would be very interested in seeing if the Knicks can pry CJ McCollum away if you can't get into the Damian Lillard sweepstakes. I don't think it'll cost nearly as much, especially if they're trading Dame somewhere else. And he is a very underrated point guard. He's been playing off the ball forever now. And I think he's a guy who can really emerge as a Batman and Robin kind of thing with Julius Randle. And I think that's definitely something where that should be looked at. And just because if you can't get Damian Lillard does not mean all hope is lost if you're the Knicks.
I like that actually a lot. Okay, so moving on to the Suns. The Suns have a big game on Friday night against the Warriors, but they are currently on an 18-game winning streak. So there had been a lot of talk about the Nets, obviously. I think their ticket is, not saying punched, but it's right up there. And then heading into this season, the Lakers were the favorites to get out of the West. The Warriors for a few weeks are making a buzz and they're still obviously up there, but what about the Phoenix Suns? The Phoenix Suns are on an 18-game winning streak. They beat the Warriors the other night. They're going to face them again Friday night. This is also Chris Paul's third team with a 17-game plus winning streak. First off, are we sleeping on the Suns?
We absolutely are sleeping on the Suns. I mean, this is incredible what they're doing. And you see a lot of teams, they get to the finals and they're like, okay, we're bored of the regular season. You already heard Trae Young come out and say, we're having trouble getting up for these games. They don't matter. You look at the Milwaukee Bucks. They've been just taking guys off, rest here, rest there, not really taking it as seriously as they probably should. And Phoenix got on the other way. They're all systems go, foot on the gas. Let's win as many games as we possibly can and have what probably is going to be the greatest regular season in Phoenix Suns history, right? So my only concern would be, are they asking too much of a Chris Paul who's older and saying, hey, this is a guy who's broken down once you got to May and June in Houston. He's a few years older than that now. Like if he's healthy, I honestly believe they have as good of a chance as anybody to win the NBA Finals. It's just, once this winning streak is over, I would prioritize having him get right versus having them win 70 games. Because at the end of the day, all that really matters is bringing that championship to Phoenix.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, nothing is promised. So I think you ride this out as much as you can in terms of if you're winning games, you're playing great, playing a high pace. I think that's really what this team is getting into. And it's really promising to see guys like the Bridges of the world, you know, Ayton, Booker's now injured, but those three guys have been, you know, sort of the pillars of, in addition to Chris Paul, in the recent winning streak. And so I think, I'm not saying you should rest Chris Paul, but if they're
playing, not rest well, him, but I'm saying, like, it's hard to tell them not like, to do it when they're winning.
Like you can't ask that for Chris Paul though. You know, like if he's hurt, he's hurt. But if he's not, he's in a play.
Like his minutes are up 2 or 3 minutes a game from last year. I would just prefer a little less. You know, he's that's all. And not right now. You got a winning streak. You got a long season to go. But you get to February, March, you're going to be wrapped up as a home court team by then. There's no reason to play him 35 plus minutes a game again until the playoffs. That's my opinion. As you said, Bridges has been great. He deserves some votes for Defensive Player of the Year. You know, we looked at that contract and we're like, wow, this is like your third or fourth option on offense getting, you know, basically $100 million. He's worth that money. Ayton looks like he's worth the max he's going to get this summer. Devin Booker's hurt right now, but he's been a huge part of this. He deserves, you know, first team all NBA votes. So those four guys are as special of a four as there really is in the sport. And it's incredible because this is a team that has had so many problems drafting for the last 15 years. They finally got it right.
And couldn't we have gotten Bridges?
A lot of teams could. I mean, Philadelphia traded him on draft night. He's from there and his mom works for the Sixers.
Yeah.
And they traded him for like to get an extra pick that became Zaire Smith, who I think is out of the league already.
Yes.
So, and he's literally exactly what the Sixers need. So yes, Knicks could have got him. It would have been great. You'd rather have him or SGA or Miles Bridges or, you know, any of these guys over Kevin Knox. Yes. But at least we didn't trade him away.
That's true. That's true. And what I love about Bridges is how like complimentary he is to that Suns team. He doesn't need the ball to be an effective player. You know, he fits like a glove. That's it.
No, he's perfect. And a lot of teams would want him. And, you know, you could have seen the Suns go in another direction last year, right? And they took it up. And so he's going to be there for a long time.
I agree.
All right, Chris, let's get to our final thoughts right after this. Okay, Chris, final thoughts time. How about this? The Oklahoma City Thunder lose to Memphis by 73 points, the greatest margin of victory in NBA history. There was no Ja Morant. What the heck happened?
I mean, it was an absolutely embarrassing performance by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, we all know what you're trying to do, but at least pretend that you're trying out there. It's unacceptable. 73 points in an NBA game. You see that with CYO leagues or high school games, but an NBA game by that many points, it's ridiculous.
I mean, it's disgraceful. And, you know, for anyone who didn't believe they were going to tank again this year, they're tanking. It's happening. And, you know, you kind of thought, okay, they tanked last year. They literally sat everybody at the end of the year and they fall to six. Do they learn their lesson? Maybe say, we're not going to do this again. No, they're all systems go further than last year. And if you're San Antonio, who is not tanking, you ought to be ashamed of yourselves to have the same record 6-16 as this Thunder team right now. You'd be ashamed of yourselves. At least the Thunder have a plan.
Hey, just don't mess with Jonte Murray and what he's doing. He's doing fantastic for my fantasy team.
Yeah, and also give Memphis credit. You know, they could have rolled over and said, okay, this is not our year. Ja's going to be out for a while. You know, the West is loaded and they're playing great. And again, 73-point victory. Unreal. I mean, kudos to them for that. Next up, the Lakers are a mess, Chris. They're 12-11. LeBron now has COVID. He should be back any day, but he's missed more than half the season with injuries. Can they turn this thing around? Are they going to go back to being a Suns, Jazz, Warriors type of contender?
Listen, all you need with LeBron is for him to suit up in the uniform and the Lakers will be okay. And we act like 12-11 is okay, listen, it's a lot below expectations for the Lakers. This is the Lakers we're talking about. But I think really the key to all this is like for him to be okay, healthy, and for him to, you know, really get those reps in with Russell Westbrook, and I think they'll be okay. I mean, I don't really see them being better than the Warriors or the Suns right now, but it wouldn't surprise me if in a few weeks the Lakers are right up there with those guys. Right below them, but around them.
I think they'll be below them. I mean, you can make a case to me right now that they could be the fourth best team going into the playoffs. I don't see them being above that. LeBron's is getting older, and I believe he, in year 19, can give you dominant stretches for a game or two, but we've not seen him play that dominant LeBron James self for a week or two at a time. And to me, that's what you need to do in playoff series. Maybe that changes. Maybe he's just resting for the playoffs, but I'm a little concerned there. And the Westbrook fit just doesn't make any sense to me. They desperately need shooting. And the guys they brought in, like Nunn, they brought back Horton Tucker, Malik Monk, they have not shot the ball well at all. So those role guys are going to have to be better. LeBron has to be better. And then the organization has to figure out, most importantly to me, how to fit Russell Westbrook into this team. And I don't know how to do that.
They're running out of options. And I think we'll have a better idea of what the organization is going to want to do in the weeks after December 15th, which is the first day that you can start moving contracts for players that you sign in the offseason. Like, something's clearly not working out. The only acquisition that has been Carmelo Anthony out of all the teams. He's been playing fantastic.
Fantastic. And, you know, this team reminds me a lot of that last LeBron in Cleveland year team where they went into the deadline. They were still a pretty good team, but like way below expectations. And they basically shipped out every role player they had for different role players. And it winded up getting them back to the finals where they lost to the Warriors. But I could see a scenario where basically they're trading all these guys they signed other than Westbrook and maybe Carmelo for other players that may fit better around LeBron. So I'm curious to see how that plays out in early February. Last up, John Wall, he wants to be freed out of Houston. He's making $40+ million a year. They said, you can come back. You can be a bench guy for us, you know, six man kind of thing. We just don't really want to disrupt our young guys like Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. And John Wall was not interested in that. Now he's just putting up hype videos of him working out. How does this play out? Because I don't think he's tradable.
I mean, I think the first thing is that he has to consider getting a salary cut, depending on where he goes, because it'll be really hard for
you. Mean a buyout?
Sorry, a buyout. And I don't know if Wall's going to do that. I mean, he's earning so much money. I mean, it's hard to tell whether he could even gain a contract remotely that size.
No,
if he were to get a buyout and play really well afterward. You kind of have to stay put a little bit, I guess. Like, I think he's not going to be moved anytime soon, but I'm sure there'll be a team desperate enough to throw out pieces out there to make that work. And maybe a team, not saying the Lakers per se, but a team.
John Wall or Westbrook again? How great would that be?
A team with playoff expectations that hasn't been meeting them. I still think John Wall could be an asset. It's just really hard at that price point.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I believe he's a guy who could help a team. I think the Lakers would love to have him, but no one can fit him on their books at $44 million a year. And money next year too at the same number. So he's got two options. He can accept the role in Houston, you know, try to be as good as he can as a sixth man or a seventh man or whatever they're really asking him to do. Try to work on his efficiency, because if he can, you know, shoot 50% from the floor in a 15-minute a game role, something I believe he is capable of doing, that could help his trade value. That can't hurt. So if he can come in and just show he's healthy, productive, I think that's his only way out of Houston, because, you know, sitting around pouting that they won't let you go when you're making $40 million a year is not going to work.
I think the most frustrating thing about the Wall situation is that he's nursed himself back into playing shape after the time he missed, and to not agree to play in whatever role the team is offering is just like backwards to me. If I'm him, like if I were his agent, I'd be telling him, hey man, just show that you can play out there. Like that'll drive up the interest in Wall and perhaps give him a better chance of finding a home somewhere else.
And it would also show that he could be a good teammate. And that's, you know, you've already seen that where I question, why is he on the bench? Well, he's being a good teammate. That's really the answer. But, you know, I'm curious to see how this plays out, because I just can't see him being traded. And we've said that with guys before in their giant contracts. And guess what? They get traded. So we'll see how it all plays out on the next All Hoops.
Yeah. And I think for our next episode, we're going to review some of the players that could be on the move that were signed in the offseason ahead of that December 15th start. I mean, it's not a deadline, but that start date. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I think there's a lot of teams. I mean, I can't say, you know, the Knicks will move Fournier, but like he could be someone, you know, there are a lot of guys out there
making a lot of money. So I'm not sure they're going to move Fournier. I do think they're going to move Kemba at some point, but that's going to do it for us here on the All Hoops podcast. Thank you for watching on YouTube or listening on Apple or Spotify. We'll be back next week, as Chris said, to discuss that December 15th opening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye everyone.